the NFL Podcast. The only podcast where the most talented person only does the intro.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and yes, Chris Wessling. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Ew. What's the laughter? Why the smiles? We will have none of that in week 14.
No smiles. It's all business. We're strictly football, and we have no senses of humor.
I'm laughing at Matt Money Smith's very factual suggestion that the person with the most talent is the person doing that little soundbite. I wonder if you added the four of our talents together, we wouldn't have as many jobs as Matt Money Smith if you added the four of us together.
Well, you are the number one Matt Money Smith fan in Los Angeles now, because you are a daily listener to his Drive Time show as well. But I'd like to think that, you know, being attached to our show has lifted his brand, I'd say, 7 to 10-fold.
We would like to think that. I'm not sure that's true, but we would like to think that.
Well, I do. Welcome everyone to the, yes, week 14 recap episode. We are going to go through every game that was played on Sunday. And listen, they can't all be beautiful. They can't all be gorgeous. In fact, if I had to come up with one sound effect that would neatly sum up the Sunday slate today, it would be this. Am I wrong?
No, they weren't competitive. They look great on paper, but it doesn't usually work out that way. We'll see. We're taping this and we'll see if the primetime games save us. Those were the best matchups on paper going
That's
in.
True.
I was driving around with Luke and that exact sound effect played randomly in a commercial on the radio, and he was like, "What does that sound effect mean?" I now have a new, more clear explanation to offer.
It means week 14 Sunday. All right, let's get into it. We'll start, obviously, now every team after this week is going to have three games to play, which means the playoffs are really starting to come into focus. We'll start today's show by digging through the NFC and what happened, because there was a lot of change right to the very top.
There's Hurts. He's back. He is floating the football. It is caught. Touchdown. Touchdown. He gets it over to Alshon Jeffrey.
Mike Reese, WIP, with the call. Yes, Jalen Hurts' NFL starting debut was supposed to be a bloodbath. Instead, Hurts ran for 100 yards, threw a touchdown pass, which you just heard, and helped lead the Eagles to a stunning 24-21 win over the Saints. Greg, we'll get to what this means for the Saints in a moment, and it's not good. But what did you see from Hurts and the Eagles' offense today?
I saw a guy whose legs and decisiveness gave them a little life. I mean, the Eagles are barely alive in the NFC East. We'll get to that for one more week. But the fact that after 55 games of the Saints not allowing a 100-yard rusher, Jalen Hurts goes over 100. And oh, by the way, Miles Sanders goes over 100. And I think the Eagles rushing game got a little boost from Jalen Hurts because of the read option and also just having to account for him. So many times in this game on 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, Hurts just picked it up with his legs. He made good decisions throwing the ball most of the day. And in the first half, when you're watching these two teams and you're thinking, wow, these two quarterbacks have pretty similar styles, it was a knockout. The Eagles offense was moving the ball up and down the field. The Eagles offensive line kind of dominated this game. That was shocking. And the Eagles defensive line played great too. It was a pretty thorough beating despite it only being a 3-point final score.
When's the last time a quarterback and a running back in Philadelphia both ran for 100 yards? I was watching this one pretty closely, Greg, and I just felt like I kind of even for the few snaps that we saw Jalen Hurts in some of these other games, that there was just a little bit of a different energy. And that's maybe one of the unexplainable things in football and sports. But, some of us wanted this change to happen earlier. I get why it was complex and why it didn't. But the Eagles are not dead, and it is not impossible to look ahead at this Washington-Philly game in Week 17 and wonder if it could still, just like these TV people like to do, put a little NFC East matchup, flex it into that Week 17 night game. It could be very important.
Philly obviously still on the ropes at 4-8-1. Washington, and we're going to get to them obviously a little bit later, up to 6-7. So Philly has to do something really special. I guess I didn't see enough from Jalen Hurts to think that this is about to be some type of Cinderella run. But this was obviously something they needed because it had gotten so stale with Carson Wentz. And on the Saints side of things, this is a tough loss. This is a bad loss. This is a loss that drops them to 10-3. It ends that long winning streak. And with a Packers win, they're now tied record-wise, but the Packers have the tiebreaker on the Saints. So right now, the Saints have lost the number one seed, Wes, in the NFC. And Taysom Hill, I talked about this in our Thursday show. I thought this was a big start for him in terms of planting that seed in Sean Payton's mind, because we knew Drew Brees was going to come back, but we didn't know how he's going to play, and we still don't know. But this is not probably the performance that Taysom Hill wants to leave with his head coach going down the stretch.
Right, not a disastrous start by any means, but some little things, taking sacks in the wrong places, overthrowing or throwing behind receivers on third downs, key plays that he couldn't come up with that ended up being factors in the outcome of the game. And like you said, if we were going to put that little birdie in Sean Payton's mind, it's not going to happen after that one.
Well, and he's probably going to start next week against the Chiefs. So everyone in the NFC is looking at this. It's not just Green Bay, who's, you know, the Packers are very excited, but the Seahawks and the Rams got to be looking at this, that they're not out of it either. They're only one back, especially thinking that the Saints are going to now have an uphill battle, certainly not insurmountable, to beat the Chiefs next week. Drew Brees sounds like he's iffy. And Hill, you know, they didn't score in the first half. For the longest time, and they had five first downs in six drives. And, you know, when he gets a fourth down key, you know, spot late in the game against an Eagles defense that lost Darius Slay, Rodney McLeod, and Avante Maddox, basically their best three players in the secondary, he holds the ball too long, which has been a problem for him. He fumbled, which has been an even bigger problem for him. And that kind of, to me, was the key sequence, because the Saints defense, after playing a rough first half, stood up, gave the offense a chance to come back. Didn't quite happen. I don't think Hill's been a disaster by any means. But I don't think he's shown nearly enough. There's certainly no controversy this year. They need Drew Brees back, and I'm sure they'd love to get him back in the regular season to get some snaps before whatever type of postseason run they have.
That was Taysom Hill's 10th fumble of the season, and it was a huge one. Oof. They were down 3 points in the opponent's territory with a chance to tie or take the lead. And once Hill loses that fumble, it was the fourth fumble he's lost this year, the defense then lets down, gives up the touchdown, and that was more or less it. There was a late touchdown for cosmetic purposes, and then a near recovery on an onside kick. But the right team won this game, and the Saints, obviously, if they end up playing on the first week of the postseason, they will look at this game and kick themselves. Speaking of the Green Bay Packers,
Rodgers takes the snap in shotgun, looks around, scrambles to his left. He could take it himself to the end zone on the run. Touchdown!
No, Wayne Larrabee, WTMJ, with the call. I love gold! Aaron Rodgers ran for a score and threw three more touchdown passes to lead the Packers to a 31-24 win over the stubborn Detroit Lions at Ford Field. The win combined with the Saints' loss to the Eagles moves the Packers, as I said, into the number one seed in the NFC. It also clinches the division for the Packers. So another big-time year for the bearded boy on the sidelines. And Aaron Rodgers, who just may have, I don't want to say sewn it up, because there's still 3 weeks to play. But on the day when Patrick Mahomes' statistical line takes a dip with the three interceptions today, Rodgers has another just awesome performance. He started the game with 10 straight completions. He hooked up with Davante Adams for a touchdown for the eighth straight game, and was just in total control. He's playing the game at such a level of mastery right now that you can't help but admire it. So the Packers get another win, and they are stacking wins, and they are in position now to have that bye if they can just keep winning until the regular season runs out.
I love the Packers getting some production out of Rashawn Gary. That's been something that's happened now each and every week. Like, you'd like to see them blow out a Lions team. Chase Daniel ends up coming in for Matthew Stafford and had a touchdown nullified on a pretty courageous attempt. And
that would have been his first rushing touchdown of his whole career.
And it was right after he threw an absolute dime on a under pressure on third and long. I was like, what is happening here? Is Chase Daniel going to make this interesting? Didn't happen. I like that the Packers are getting more production out of Rashawn Gary because they need their pass rush. To me, that's kind of their X factor. And, today against the Lions isn't the best test, but they got it done.
I mean, Stafford looked like he really banged up those ribs pretty bad in that. Devontae Adams, we talked to him a little bit on the preview show. I don't know what else to say about him. But today, 8 straight games with a touchdown broke the franchise record held by Don Hutson, who has not played football in quite a while. So that record has been out there.
Well, I don't know what you guys said on the pregame show, but I'm sorry for DeAndre Hopkins because Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill are the all-pro receivers this year, in my opinion. Mm. Devontae Adams is like George Kittle last year. He takes the fight to you every game. He beats you in every way. He beats you at the catch point, after the catch. He's reliable. He gets in the end zone. I just love the way he's playing with so much confidence. And I really believe that this Aaron Rodgers has had some great, all-time great seasons. This might be his best one. He's been practically perfect this year. He has been practically perfect.
2011 was like, I put that with any, like ahead of any Peyton Manning or Brady season, which they
until the New York Giants found him in January.
Right, but I'm just counting the regular season. But it has been awesome. He would have my MVP vote. He had it coming into this game. I don't think it's anywhere close to over because 3 weeks is an eternity, and Mahomes has been incredible. But he's got the edge right now.
Game, and he has been just about perfect with his throws.
Wes, you nailed it. I believe it was Wes last week when you said that the Packers have surrounded him with just enough talent. If maybe Robert Tonyan wasn't there or MVS didn't made a couple less plays or Devontae Adams got banged up a little bit more,
it would be a problem.
You got Alan Lazard there. You got Aaron Jones healthy now. It's not like a bounty of gifts like Patrick Mahomes has, which I think you have to factor in when you're talking the MVP conversation as well. But it's enough, and then he maxes out all those guys. Robert Tonyan has 9 touchdowns this year, the most
much better line though, like a great line, like a top 3 or 4
a great
line,
offensive line,
which makes a big difference.
Very fair. He has 9 touchdowns, the most by a Packers tight end since 2001. Who was it?
Bubba Franks.
Correct.
Bubba How about Franks. That? Remember right off dude? The top.
Good job by you, Greggy. Yes, and Matthew Stafford, he hurts his ribs. A tough thing for Detroit because they were fighting hard in this game. They fell behind early, pulled even at 14-14, but then the Packers just almost used their power of will to just kind of take themselves to the finish line and then get the W. So big, big win for the Packers, who are 10-3. They went 13-3 last year. So the bearded boy, Matt LaFleur, even I can do this math. They are 23-6.
Wow.
In 2 seasons, the regular season so far. That's
week
pretty
16.
Damn good.
Week good 16, math. Packers-Titans is one of the bigger games left on this little slate of games we have.
I'd also say, like, for the doubting of them, I doubted them last year. Like, I just didn't see them as their record. I don't have those feelings this year because I think the NFC is weak, and they could beat anyone in that conference.
All right, so we talked about the top of the NFC playoff picture. Let's see who's fighting for the 6th and 7th seeds down below, starting with a trip to Tampa.
Out of a gun, Brady takes the snap, has protection, looks upfield, throws a deep ball downfield to Scotty Miller. Miller K makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Run, Scotty, run. Fire the cannons.
Jane Decker off. WFUS. With the call, Scotty Miller. Remember him? You have a nice little season, and then go get Antonio Brown, and you forget all about him. Well, maybe it's time to get Scotty back involved. The slot man helped Tom Brady break out of his deep ball slump, and a nightmare performance by Vikings kicker Dan Bailey helped the Bucs get their season back on track. A 26-14 win. Nice game from the defense here, boys. Tampa Bay, I know, Greg, you've been talking the Bulls of Sants all year, but I thought in addition to the offensive struggles, the defense had been in a little bit of a funk. Not here. They sacked Kirk Cousins 6 times. The last one produced a fumble that basically ended this game in terms of a competition. And after a rough start in the first quarter for the defense against the run, I mean, this is a great run defense, as we know, and the Vikings put up 71 yards in the first quarter alone, and you're thinking, uh-oh, and Brady's airmailing passes to Gronk and Chris Godwin, and you're thinking they sleptwalked through the bye, and they came out of it still looking like a mess, but then they kind of got it together. The Miller touchdown was big. They got things calmed down with Dalvin Cook, who still crossed 100 yards, but it seemed like it was going to be a much bigger day. And then, like I said, I mean, this was – we see it. We saw it in week one with Stephen Gostkowski. Hell, it happened with the Jets with Sergio Castilla today. Sometimes these kickers, you could tell the moment just crushes them, and they couldn't kick a 20-yarder if they had to. And that's what happened to Dan Bailey in a big spot. He misses all 4 of his kicks, an extra point. And then 3 field goals, 2 of them very makeable, the third one a long kick, but essentially cost them, you know, 10 points and took them out of the game. I know Zimmer likes Bailey, and Bailey has been having a pretty good season.
What's not to like?
Before the last 2 weeks, he's been pretty good for them. But I don't know how you move forward with him when you're trying to get a playoff spot and your kicker just basically cost you a game.
Mm.
He's had such a weird career. At one point, he was the guy that Justin Tucker had to take his throne.
Right.
And then he went through a bad spot where Dallas released him because he seemed to lose some leg strength. Comes to Minnesota, struggles right off the bat, and then hits like a nice sweet spot in Minnesota where he starts nailing all his kicks again. He's had 4 different seasons where he's only missed 2 field goals. Justin Tucker can't say that.
You got that, all those Bailey stats off the top of your head? I mean, what's going on here?
Hey, Dan's not the only one who knows kickers.
Oh, he knows him.
Well, I have to ask, like, Dan, what happens with the, you know, this kicker club is a complex environment. It sounds like some kickers aren't necessarily just allowed in because they're a kicker. Dan Bailey, I would imagine, is posted up to the bar in the past and, you know, whistle Dixie about his skills. But after a day like today, is the club nice to him? Or do they, you know, like, it's kind of like your friend. If you're kind of a materialist and your friend falls on tough times, you kind of look past them to the other cooler friends. What happens with someone like Bailey in this situation?
So in the case of Bailey, as a veteran that's been around for a long time, he has admission to the club. When things are going really well, he's going to be in the champagne room. He's going to have bottle service. Everything's going to be cool. After last week when he struggled some, he got kicked out of bottle service and was just belly up at the bar. And after today, we had to ask him to leave. Not for good, but it, you know, we can't be having that. You can't miss all 4 of your kicks when your team's fighting for a playoff spot. And, you know, the Vikings are a team that I was high on as a team that was going to make a run to the playoffs. They definitely started to get me nervous the last couple of weeks, even though they were still winning. And now, you know, after today's game, it's going to be stacked up against them. They got to win out, most likely. And I don't know, based on what we've seen the last 3 weeks, to have a lot of confidence about that. But, man, Vikings fandom is tough. It's one of the toughest fan bases to have to deal with your team because bad things happen. But that the curse of the Vikings kicker, it is absolutely real. You just go through the years. It feels like every 3 to 5 years there's a calamity that costs them a season or a Super Bowl trip. And it's happening again. This was a game no one's going to forget, this one in Minnesota.
I mean, they had 40 minutes time of possession, which is, you know, an overrated stat. It's like guys like Mike Zimmer love it, except you just shorten the game for you to lose. They had 8 possessions in this game. Like, that's half as many as the 49ers had, for instance, in their game. They moved the ball pretty well. But ultimately, Kirk Cousins gets sacked 6 times. The Vikings don't have any sacks. JPP's had a nice season. He's had a nice career. I mean, I've always loved watching him play. He is all effort all the time. You can't run a screen against him. And this season especially, it feels like he comes up with one monster play every week, and he had it with the forced fumble late in the
game. Almost just grabbed that out of Kirk Cousins' hand.
Almost.
That fumble.
It was... He nearly did. Mark, and Wes, go ahead, Wes.
Mark, Dan Bailey is like Whiskey Pete.
Okay.
He's over in the corner. There once was a day where after the game, he's the guy everybody wants to be around. He's holding court. He's got all the jokes flying. Everybody's having a grand time. Drinks are flying. Whiskey Pete's the place to be. And then, you know, flash forward 10 years down the line, Whiskey Pete's just telling about the good old days. Never shuts up, and all he's doing is drinking whiskey all day and drinking whiskey all night. Nobody wants to be around him.
Yeah, drinking outside my club is what he's doing. Also, Wes, he was born January 26, 1988. You were coming at me a little bit on the kicker knowledge, so I had to drop his birthday for you.
Just oh, nice.
You Googled his birthday? We're supposed to give you credit for that?
My producer sent me a private
message. Does he have any nicknames on Pro Football Reference that you while you're on that page staring at those graphics?
Whiskey Pete.
Whiskey Pete, it is. All right, let's move on. Let's move on and check in on another team fighting for a wild card spot.
Snap to Murray, backing up, in trouble, throws it back in the end zone. Arnold jumps up into the air and catches it for a touchdown. There are four Giants in the area. It looked like Murray might be just throwing that ball away.
When pigs fly, baby.
What does that mean?
Who knows?
Ron Wolfe has like reached a point as a broadcaster where he doesn't need to make sense, and we all just like, oh, well, that sounded cool and fun. When pigs fly, baby. Yeah, that was Wolfe with Dave Pasch of KTAR. Kyler Murray connected on that, floated that scoring pass to Dan Arnold. And Hassan Reddick, my goodness, had a franchise record, 5 sacks and 3 forced fumbles as the Cardinals move back into the NFC playoff spot with a 26-7 win over the Giants. Mark Daniel Jones returned to the lineup for the G-Men, but he did not look like he was ready for Reddick or the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm not sure he dress for work today? It's unclear to me. He couldn't have been worse in this spot. It was a real, I thought, deflating event for the Giants, who were one of the stories of the week. Sacked 8 times, as you mentioned, 5 by Hassan Reddick, who I think, you know, hearing him after the game, he was stunned that happened. It was a franchise record. But it was Marcus Golden that got it going early. Daniel Jones, up to his old tricks, had a strip sack. Marcus Golden returned it 30 yards. Now, that was where I wondered if New York was going to hang tough in this game, because they had it deep in Giants territory. They held Kyler Murray to a goal in the offense to a goal line stand, but then the turnovers kept coming. Deion Lewis for the Giants lost a kick return fumble, a weird play where the ball was sort of inadvertently kicked out by a defender, which is unreviewable, but that led to the Dan Arnold touchdown from the replay right there. And then Daniel Jones had a second lost fumble, and it allowed, I thought, the Cardinals enough time to kind of get warmer on offense. Early on, it looked like Kyler Murray had been confused, as a la Russell Wilson to some degree, by some of these Giants' disguised blitzes and tactics. But the offense, you know, it for the New York, just a total disaster. They're one of the worst fourth quarter offenses in the league. They went in tough territory to begin with. Daniel Jones had 15 net yards passing at half. It looked like it, and to the point where Joe Judge basically told the Fox crew, yeah, we're looking to potentially just put Colt McCoy in this game. And Daniel Jones got a little banged up, and Colt McCoy did finish, but Colt McCoy had been warming up during parts of the second half. So, you know, I don't think it's going to lead to a quarterback switch, because McCoy came in and was no more serviceable necessarily. But that, you know, it reminds you that these NFC East teams, the records reflect a lack of completion roster-wise. And this Giants offense, which I thought, you know, the ground game got going in recent weeks. You could kind of trust that, and Wayne Gallman looked like a much better version of previous years' Wayne Gallman's. Not today. DeAndre Hopkins did enough for the Cardinals. Dan Arnold, who shows up every week for that team with big plays, helped Kyler Murray, who ran the ball 10 times today. And so he got going, and that was a part of their offense. I wouldn't say it was as killer as it's been in the past, but they didn't shy away from it. So they're hanging on by dear life in that NFC, but the NFC is not like the AFC. I could see a 7-9 or 8-8 type team grabbing that last wild card spot if these inconsistent operations don't get on a hot streak.
Well, they got the Eagles, 49ers, and Rams. You win those first two, you're in.
There was some criticism that Daniel Jones' hamstring wasn't ready, and that's why you see Hassan Reddick get 5 sacks. You see 8 sacks, because he shouldn't have been playing.
Well, it's also a terrible offensive line. I mean, I think it's all mixed in there. Did he look spry and healthy? Not necessarily, because his mobility is a big part of his game. You didn't see that today. But the offensive line also, I thought, gave him very little room to operate. I mean, this is not a Cardinals team that does that every week. So it tells you that New York's line is a big old hot mess.
Giants got flexed into primetime next week against the Browns, and the fact that Jones was not healthy in this game, and Joe Judge said he didn't have regrets playing Daniel Jones in this game, but it's something they're going to have to monitor. Their season is, you know, on the brink at 5-8 here, and they're going to need a couple wins here, including potentially the one against Cleveland. So is Colt McCoy potentially the answer behind center?
Colt McCoy against the Browns in primetime Sunday night, week 15? Ooh. You got to be kidding me.
Who would have thunk it? Line.
Who would have thunk it? Give the Cardinals some credit. I know Jones isn't healthy, but to go 390 yards to 159 to have a total full-scale beatdown, we haven't really seen this out of this Cardinals team against anyone. That's as surprising a result as I think we had today, the way that they were playing, to just totally dismantle the Giants. They get some credit, and they're the favorites now.
All I'd say is when you watch this, like, tell me if you think it looked like a beatdown from first quarter through fourth in terms of the Cardinals offense.
Right.
I just don't totally, yardage aside, I just struggle to buy them going forward. But it was a better showing than it's been of late.
It was a must-win for the Cardinals. They got it. The Giants fall out of first place in the NFC East. Let's talk about the team that sits there all alone.
Pocket collapses on him. He threw a pick right down the sideline to Cameron Curl. He gets a block from James Smith-Williams. He's still going. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown. Touchdown, Washington. Second defensive score of the game for Washington.
Woo-wee. Cameron Curl jumped the route, gathered the Nick Mullins pass, took it to the house. Washington's second defensive score in the game in a 23-15 win over the 49ers. Yes, Washington now sole possession of first place in the NFC East with three games to play. Mark, Chase Young was also a monster in this game. He had the other defensive score. This football team defense wins games.
Chase Young, I thought, produced one of the best rookie outings I've ever seen by a rookie defender. I mean, you could kind of feel this coming at some point for him. He just took over the game. And I think it started early on a play, which was real. It showed how kind of mentally tuned in he is too. With Nick Mullins kind of hanging around in the pocket, Chase Young watched Justin Skule come at him and basically said, I'm not going to rush the passer. And then bang, eyes off of Chase Young. He's left alone. He darts at Mullins and dropped him to the turf. And they brought it up and showed it on replay a couple times because it was a really interesting approach. He then blew up Jeff Wilson on a forced fumble that gave Washington the ball at San Francisco's 25. At one point, like, Nick Mullins had a weird shuffle pass. Chase Young, like, bent his body to tip it down to the ground, and then the touchdown came, the fumble recovery touchdown for 47 yards, and he did not look like a defensive lineman to me running down that sideline. He looked more like a big old running back with wheels. I mean, he's just a next-level athlete. He took them completely out of this game, but because it's the Niners that kind of fought back, and at one point, Alex Smith suffered a calf injury right before half, so Dwayne Haskins came in, did Dwayne Haskins things. I thought he looked okay on an opening about 70-something yard drive where they went for a field goal. That helped them out, but then the offense kind of fell apart. They're just not the same offense without Antonio Gibson. They aren't, and they weren't as able to be as creative today. The Niners gutted this out. I mean, I look at this Niners team, and we forked them, and they're gone. But this is a team playing in Arizona Stadium with the Cardinals logo and name in the end zone. I just think it's been as much of bad luck a team could face in one campaign. The Niners have. Washington's defense is super legit, and I would give them a chance to win this division if they can get anything out of their offense and if Alex Smith is healthy.
We're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo and whether Kyle Shanahan wants to move forward with him. I think they got to redo that quarterback room. Nick Mullins is just, I think, you know, he's
but they, it's one thing to, like, lose everything that they've lost, and then you come into the game and you lose Debo and you lose Debo right away, and then you lose Mostert, and you're playing this Washington team. Ultimately, like, their offense was no different than Washington's offense. Washington had the ball 14 times and scored 9 points. They had 95 yards and 35 dropbacks. So it's like I think he's a good backup. Actually, I think he's played fine. I really do.
Nick Mullins has started like 16 games and never thrown for less than 250 yards in any one of them. It's the turnovers.
Right. Who cares about yards? It's like he seems to be addicted to atomic mistakes. That's all.
I think he's productive, but he doesn't protect the ball. But it's the same thing as last week with Debo out. They never really got into their flow. Mostert came back, but you know, they just it's one thing after another with this team. It's like they got four or five guys getting injured every game.
This Washington team, they're in first, but depending how you know, serious this Alex Smith injury. And even with Alex Smith, I mean, his numbers were even worse than Haskins. Smith dropped back 20 times, had 57 yards, and got sacked and threw a pick. So
yeah, they made life tough on him.
I think they're going to find a way to get into the playoffs if you had to pick one, but they are limited. This is the game I'm least looking forward to on Game Pass. 29 drives in this game.
This was my anti. I wanted it going in, but there was 10 minutes left in the second half while every other game was in halftime. I thought to myself, what has gone on here?
You can sell that one with Chase Young because I watched quite a bit of this game, and that was as close as you see to Lawrence Taylor.
Exactly. He's beautiful.
In a year without many great defensive rookies, and even, you know, Chase Young was, you know, not productive for a long stretch. I think he went 2 months without a quarterback hit or a sack. This type of game might be enough if he finishes strong to go get that rookie.
I think he's healthy now. He had this hip injury. Yep. I mean, he looked healthy.
Breaking news here. This from the New York Times. Following years of protests from fans and Native American groups, the Cleveland Indians have decided to change their team name, moving away from a moniker that has long been criticized as racist. Three people familiar with the decision said Sunday, "Why do I bring it up? Because the move follows a decision by the Washington football team in the NFL in July to stop using a name long considered a racial slur." And obviously this has all been part of a larger national conversation. A lot of things have changed in 2020. The Indians now join the Redskins in the dustbin of history. How about that?
All it took was Washington being threatened with losing $500 million worth of endorsements, and they're now having like an ownership battle behind the scenes that is in the courts.
And now they're in first place.
I think they're keeping that name. They're going to be the football team forever. Come
on. All right, let's move on. Let's now move over to the AFC, starting with, yes, the number one seed over in that conference.
Left-footed punter taken by Hardman. First time he's going to return today.
Oh.
And he's got an edge at the 40, 45. Hardman at midfield, 45, 40. Two blocks, 30, 25. Jet fuel, 15, 10, 5. Get your boarding pass. The jet is taken into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Punt return for a touchdown. The first in the career of McCole Hardman to go with his kickoff returns for touchdowns.
Mitch Holtis with a call, WDAF. I mean, how crazy is it that the Chiefs offense, they have a guy that they call the Jet, and it's not even Tyreek Hill? That doesn't seem fair. Mecole Hardman's 67-yard punt return, the final touchdown in a run of 30 straight points for the Chiefs, who clinched another AFC West title in a 33-27 win over the Dolphins in the same building where they claimed Super Bowl 54. This February. Greg, the Chiefs started and finished slowly in this game, but that surge in the middle was just too much.
Yeah, it reminded me so much of the playoffs last year where they spot, you know, an opponent 10 points, but you felt like it could have been more. Miami missed a kick, and Devontae Parker dropped a potential touchdown. If, you know, you add those up, maybe it was 17-0. You somehow forced Patrick Mahomes into three turnovers. One of them, he just dropped a fumble, but, you know, he throws three interceptions and you still lose. Like, you do all these things right. You have them scrambled. They thought they were going to come with the blitz. They didn't really early in the game. They're doing a good job. And yet you lose going away because it's Kansas City. And I know, like, Mahomes maybe lost a little in the MVP race, but he still made, I would say, four plays in this game that, I mean, you just like marvel at that. I mean, were just unreal throw. I mean, I know he didn't. He had the turnovers, but he also put up 390 yards and just had some unreal plays.
Right, and this game is most likely 37-10 if Hardman doesn't fumble when they're going in for a score after that safety, and then things changed and give credit to Tua and the Dolphins, who showed a lot of fight here, and they're a team that is easy to respect. But the 33-27, it sometimes makes me think that the Chiefs have reached that level, and they're 12-1, obviously, this year, and they go 12-4, 13-3 last year, won the Super Bowl, won their last eight games, that they can get bored. And then when they get a little bit of a scare put into them, like a 10-0 score in this game, they wake up, they just kick ass for about an hour and a half real time. And then once they get into that zone, like Greg, you had mentioned on Thursday, it's time for the Chiefs to blow out a team. I think it's because some of their focus wanes a little bit sometimes. This is just a wild theory, but it kind of checks out when you watch a game like this.
I agree, because if you think of the two moments where they went into the game, I mean, look, they're trying hard, they're professionals. Of course, they're intense every game. But the two spots where it was like, ooh, this is the big game for the Chiefs going in, that come to mind to me was the Ravens in week two or three and the Bucks game, where they both come out and they blow the doors off. When they are needing to be at their very best, they are. And Miami fans are probably saying, but we didn't have all of our players. And that is totally worth pointing out. Not only did they lose Myles Gaskin, who's been great for them when he's played right before the game with COVID-19, they didn't have Kyle Van Noy, who was defensive player of the week last week. They didn't have a Landon Roberts. And then they lose Devontae Parker and Jakeem Grant in this game. Tua had played fairly well. This was a game I appreciated having Tony Romo on the call, because I think he helped point out the ways that Tua played well. I'm not saying he was like great, but he does a lot of good things for a rookie. And so this wasn't a discouraging game, I don't think, for Tua.
Did you mention Gesicki?
And he left late. He had a nice game before that, and yeah, really he hurt his shoulder, and if that's serious, that's really going to hurt him too in the fourth quarter. So that was rough when it came to the Dolphins.
You could point to Miami though as the team that has people that gave Mahomes issues in the past when they faced New England. Some of those people are in Miami, and they gave him trouble today. I mean, I think it's very easy to decipher the difference between these two teams and the tiers between them, but this is what Miami does every week. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but they cause all sorts of problems with people that most people hadn't heard of a year or 2 years ago. So I stick with what kind of I was saying on Thursday. I think they're really well coached. I said they were up for anything. Anything means playing well and then losing too. So that is something that they were up for today. But
literally anything. Oh, well, any,
up for anything. It's like you don't come in with a hard agenda. And they you know, but I do think the future is very bright. Every week they seem to game plan well for the team that they're playing. Not just, hey, we're going to stick everyone into what we do, the same thing every week. They seem flexible on that front. I had some hope that they were going to hang around in this thing, but the Chiefs, man, when they hit that gas pedal, like you're saying, Dan, night's out. It's all over. Goodbye.
Wes, I like talking 80s baseball with you. It's so great to have a lefty quarterback back in the league. Boomer Esiason was one of my favorite players ever. I'm sure he has a special place in your heart as well. And now I think part of what I like about Tua is not just that he's a lefty, because there's been plenty of crummy lefty quarterbacks. It has to be more than that. I just like his throwing motion and how fluid he is. It reminds me of like Will Clark. Remember that beautiful, sweet lefty stroke of Will the Thrill?
Absolutely.
Sometimes with lefties, and there's a little bit of lefty jealousy, anybody that's played sports can attest to, it just looks better, and it just looks so good coming out of Tua's arm. He's such an athlete and a great thrower of the football.
Will Clark, baseball's greatest red ass.
He was an all-time
red ass. Wasn't
he
meant to be a total jerk?
Well, he's a red ass, which is different, but in the same category.
In the 30 for 30, they describe his red ass as, he'd go and play you in poker, not even care if he won or not, just as long as he could tell you at the end of the game that he beat your ass in poker, even if he lost money. He just wanted to win, just so he could shut
up. All the overseas listeners are like, what is a red ass? You must look it up on Urban Dictionary.
AJ Pierzynski, a great red ass.
It's like the Cockney section of our audience, apparently.
Pete Rose, a red ass.
All-timer. Any other thoughts on this game? Wes, did you track this one at all?
I did, and I would push back a little bit on saying that Tua played well. Tua played well in the second half. I thought he was not ready for prime time in the first half, and that was when they had a chance to really stomp on the Chiefs. When the defense was making all those plays, it looked to me like one team had a great offense and the other team was still learning to find its sea legs.
Right.
And that's not to say that Tua's not going to grow every week. In fact, he grew throughout the game, and that's a very promising sign. But I thought that the difference in the game was that the Dolphins' offense wasn't ready to compete in the first half.
No. When Parker dropped that touchdown, I thought, like, they're not going to win this game. They got to play close to perfect. And when your leading receivers are Lynn Bowden and Mac Collins, and your leading running back is DeAndre Washington, and you're 8-5 and in the playoff race, it's like, okay, I mean, just let's try to win some games. Congratulations for being competitive and move forward. Maybe a big game against the Patriots next week for the Dolphins.
It feels like Tua's like improves because he seems to have these sort of halves where he vanishes. When he's kind of like fancy free and they're just kind of going for it.
Well, he's not that physically gifted. And so that is a tough thread, I think. Not to cut you off. Sorry, Mark.
It's okay.
I just mean like, if he's relying on going through his progressions and his eyes and stuff like that, that's like advanced stuff for a rookie to have to try to like really look great.
And everyone is talking TJ Watt, Aaron Donald, Miles Garrett, Defensive Player of the Year. Xavier Howard now has 9 interceptions and 5 picks in the last 5 weeks. That's pretty damn good.
And one of the best.
Interception was insane.
Insane.
Pretty damn good to pull off what he was doing. That was one-on-one coverage against Tyreek Hill, and he came up with that pick. All right. In other playoff matters in the AFC.
They'll sweep it right side of Jonathan Taylor. Huge hole. 45, 50, 45, 40 down the far sideline. Outsprinting everybody. 10, 5. Jonathan Taylor. Touchdown. INDY. A 62-yard run for the rookie out of Wisconsin. His longest rush of the season. And now the Colts lead at 26-17.
Matty Taylor. WFNI. Johnny Taylor, have a day. The rookie running back rushed for 2 scores, including that 62-yard breakaway dash and the Colts' 44-27 win over the fading Raiders in Vegas. Indy was dominant on offense in this one, piling up nearly 300 yards by halftime,
wow,
finishing with over 450 yards total in a win that keeps them tied with the Titans atop the AFC South with 3 weeks to play. Meanwhile, for the Raiders, that's 3 consecutive lackluster performances, 2 of them losses. Probably should have lost the Jets game as well. And the Raiders, they look a lot like the John Gruden team that limped to the golf course last December. And it seemed like this year was going to be different, but I don't think it is.
Jonathan Taylor is interesting. When Cam Newton got COVID, came back and really hasn't been the same quarterback he was earlier in the year. Jonathan Taylor comes back from COVID and plays lights out. He played way better in the last few weeks than he did before he had COVID. What's up with that?
So you're coming up with a theory that the COVID helped him.
I have
he
not.
He does look better. He is running like crazy.
It's not a hard theory, it doesn't sound like, but it's percolating in Wes's mind.
It could be like he's just decided, okay, I've just had a life and death experience. Let's just forget all these things that don't matter at all. Push all these self-doubts out the window and go play like I know how to play.
How different they are when their ground game is doing what it's doing. I mean, they scored on 7 of 8 drives before they, you know, took a knee to end the thing. Phillip Rivers, I think in the last 4 or 5 weeks, has produced maybe 3 of his best games. And it gives you some hope. I mean, I was ready to count them out because of their offense seems so limited. But suddenly, T.Y. Hilton has risen from the dead. So, you know, there's a couple factors at play here.
I mean, they're going to win 11 games. They don't feel quite like an 11-5 team. I'm with you. But they do deserve they are a tough offense, I think, to prepare for. And they definitely have players on defense. And they're going to win 11 games. Like, signing Phillip Rivers, I'm ready to say, is an unqualified success. What else were you going to do?
You could have signed Cam Newton, for instance, and it probably would have been a huge mistake. And a lot of people thought that the Colts should have went that direction. And yes, I think Rivers, and I was one of many people that had some reservations whether this was going to work. But he has been, for the most part, very good for them. But the Jonathan Taylor situation and Naheem Himes, who's a nice guy in the mix as well, that's so important for them. I mean, I view them, obviously, as a tier below the true contenders. I think that I like the Titans better than them, but maybe the Colts have more balance ultimately, but the Titans are just a little bit of a higher ceiling for me. But it wouldn't surprise me if either of those teams end up winning the division. So I like the Colts. They're a hard team to kind of fall in love with.
Yeah, they showed up, though.
Between them and the Titans, it's like, who's healthier that week?
Right. They both have really tough week 16 games on the road, where the Colts are at the Steelers and the Titans are at the Packers. Now, a million things can happen, but the other, you know, spots on the schedule all look pretty doable. Those teams are both going to the playoffs, though. And I'm not saying it hurts the end of the regular season, but I'm not so sure seeding matters that much. You know, there's no home field advantage.
I think it's the opponent you get. Like, you right, need to match like, up well with the opponent,
it's just
not
like,
the seed.
You have a nice moment, you win a division, but whether the Colts are the 5 or the 6 seed, or whether they're the 3 or the 4 seed, is it really going to make a big difference in their playoff run? Who the hell knows?
Interesting thing happened on the Colts offensive line early in this game. So Anthony Costanzo, who sprained his MCL in his knee a couple weeks back, he returned to the lineup, leaves the game after a series. They put in a person named Chaz Green as his replacement. And I mean, some people, and I mean no disrespect to the Green family, but sometimes you just know it's not going to work out. Chaz Green is not going to be a great blindside protector for Phillip Rivers. And indeed, he wasn't. In fact, he was so bad in his one series that they pulled him out of the game. So Frank Reich said, Quentin? And put Quentin Nelson at left tackle for a little bit until Costanzo came back in the game. You had a Chaz Green take there, Wes?
Oh, I mean, this is the guy Adrian Claiborne took down 8 sacks on. He's proven by he's the guy who single-handedly sabotaged the Colts offense last week when he had to play.
Well, Cowboys fans still call that the Chaz Green game. It was that Falcons game, yeah, where he just, that was it.
There's first string, there's second string, there's
legacy.
Third string, and then there's Chaz Green string, which is off the roster.
Oh, no. Kenny Moore had an incredible Odell Beckham Jr.-like interception in this game. And the Colts defense, in general, that's one of the things that they do well. They forced 3 more turnovers. They have 22 this season. So, you know, they ball hawk a bit on defense, and Rivers can carve you up if you protect them still, and T.Y. is getting hot, and if the running game gets going, okay. I can talk myself into these couple a little bit.
Split with the Titans, beat the Packers, beat the Raiders. They've ultimately done what they needed to do to get to the dance.
All right. What was I going to say?
What's Mark smiling about?
Greg's just, I appreciate Greg's zeal for these playoff races, where this is the point of the year where there are 3 or 4 teams that are going to make the playoffs. That I've not been as vocal this time around. I just simply don't buy in any level. Colts are one of them. I think they're tough, but Greg seems to be more into the who gets in, how does it happen mathematically. They're all special, and like some of them to me are special in a different way.
Some of them are not special at all.
Right now, If you feel good about putting the Browns in the playoffs, and you probably should, and you feel good about the Colts...
Well, you don't feel good about that, but, I mean, if you're going to look at it mathematically, you should.
What do you mean? They're 9-3.
Ooh, well, because you're on a big lock-off Monday night. What a night
that's
going
to be. They'll be fine. They're going to get beat on Monday, and they'll be okay. 9-4. Just
close. They can take a
out.
Loss and survive.
Browns, Colts / Titans, the other wild card. That leaves one more, so it's going to come down to the Dolphins, the Ravens... And I mean, the Raiders are deep in
the Raiders.
Now.
The Raiders play 2 of those teams, I think. I think they play the Dolphins and someone else.
And your Patriots. And, and Rosenthal's just happy he didn't have to do the recap with anyone else. He could do it with his own little private hive on Thursday night. So good for him. All right. Let's talk about the Titans. He's waiting for Greg to return fire. Nothing.
Going to run Henry at right guard. Big hole. 30. 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. The Yulee Bulldozer. Touchdown, Titans!
The Yulee Bulldozer. I like that. Mike Keith, of course. The great Mike Keith. WGFX. Derrick Henry ran for 215 and two touchdowns, and the Tennessee Titans dominated Jacksonville 31-10. That's 12 straight losses for the Jaguars, who stank. Mark, when Henry gets into the zone, the zone that he's in now, and it's usually in December, there's no one in football quite like him.
No, and it seems to, in some of these games, happen in the first half, and you can tell right away that he's in that zone, that he's dialed in, and a team like the Jaguars has literally no chance. I feel like I've watched this Titans game that happened right today about six times, because it's the same thing. It's one or two magical shots to A.J. Brown. It's a lot of Henry, and it's simply over by halftime. You've left the team that you're playing so flummoxed, and I think in this game, the defense, they shut down James Robinson early. They made life real tough on Mike Glennon. Mike Glennon was pulled for Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew brought a little life to the offense. The running game got going, but they were way too deep in a hole for any of that to matter. I mean, this was a game where the Jaguars basically, I thought, 8 minutes into this thing. Now, I watched every minute of it, but I would have bet everything inside of my house that they were going to get waxed, and they were waxed. And
what's the value there?
I mean, it's not excessive, but I am a Spartan, sort of more of a Spartan type personality, so it would be doing me a favor on some level just to push all these objects out onto the street. Someone comes by, picks them up, but we have to probably rebuy some stuff. Anyways, I would just say that when you're talking about the Colts, like, honestly, if someone has a Colts fetish, I would be much closer with that on the Titans. I just think the Titans, when they are on, are unstoppable. Then they'll have a game, you know, a week from now where all these other issues crop up and they don't get in that flow early and you can nip them. But this team, powerfully, like in terms of pure offensive power, I think can lay it to anyone in the AFC. And the only concern I'd have to be with the same kind of game script we saw against the Chiefs last year. But, I mean, Henry is an MVP candidate to me. I'll say it every week. I just think he is.
Henry is 468 yards away from joining the 2000 club. There's only seven running backs.
He's going to do it, I think.
Whoa. 468 divided by three. Somebody.
It's like 150
yards or something.
He needs 100 and...
It's like 154.
Yeah.
Let's say
I had it written down
yards.
Somewhere here.
That is obviously within range, and I would not rule it out because, Wes, when this guy gets going... And it's this time of year, and it's a good Titans team, so you're running the clock a lot, running the ball a lot to run clock and try to close out games. And teams tired and beat up in December. He is such a weapon this time of year.
This time of year, and on a team with A.J. Brown. And really, Corey Davis has stepped up this year on pace for about 1,000 yards. But A.J. Brown, like, to open that game with that one-handed catch was just phenomenal. That guy seems to get better every week. I still go back and forth among Terry McLaurin, A.J. Brown, and D.J. Metcalf over who's the best receiver in that draft class because they're all three absolute studs, and they changed their offenses. The Titans' offense is pretty loaded.
It is, right. And they're also different, which I think helps, that there's really not many power running teams like them, and there's certainly not two guys on the outside. It's not like these little guys in the slot. Humphreys, I think, is now out for the year, actually. It's two guys on the outside, one of which, Corey Davis, as you mentioned, came into the game with more numbers than A.J. Brown this year, which I think would surprise a lot of people that Davis has been that good. He's not the number one receiver, I don't think, but for him to go 1,000, they're tough to prepare for.
It was Henry's fourth game with at least 200 yards and two scores. That sets an NFL record that he had previously held with Hall of Famers. Listen to these names. Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, LaDainian Tomlinson. He's a Hall of Fame level player. Now he just needs the longevity, and I guess that's the hardest part. But 2,000 yards, you put that on the resume too, and we are flying, Wes.
I mean, we're flying.
A man of history.
They put him back in there. They put him back in there to get the 200. That kind of thing where he's getting these 26 carries, 30 carries. He seems indestructible, but I don't know. That worries me a little bit.
Also, he's run over 100 yards in 9 straight road games. Like, who does this? That's
crazy.
Awesome. All right. Let's now dig into some more grisly affairs on the schedule.
Quick toss near side. Ball is caught into the end zone. It's Disley.
No selling
touchdown,
this.
Touchdown, Seahawks.
Play fake to Carlos Hyde. Will Disley comes across into the right flat, makes the catch, turns upfield, and welcome back, Uncle Will. Touchdown, Seahawks, 29-3 now. Seattle over the Jets.
Yes, Russell Wilson threw four touchdown passes, including that dart to Will Disley, before giving way to the legend, Geno Smith. Geno Smith revenge game late in the third quarter. The Seahawks laughed their way to a 40-3 win over the Jets at the stadium formerly known as the Clink. We knew this game would be a shameless blowout, but that almost doesn't give it enough credit for the total absence of competition in this one. This was not an NFL game. This was the Seattle Seahawks against, you know, Our Ladies of Perpetual Misery, you know, based in Hoboken. Like, this was not a real game. And get credit to Pete Carroll for understanding that. So that's why he got Russell Wilson out of the game in the third quarter. Jamal Adams chased Sam Darnold out of bounds behind the line of scrimmage, which gave him 8.5 sacks, which gives him the record for defensive backs in a season. Then they got him out of the game. It was basically a glorified exhibition for Seattle. The only thing missing was the fans to enjoy it all. You could tell the Seahawks players certainly did. So they keep pace with the Rams, and they have a trip to Washington next week and then a big showdown with the Rams in Week 16.
The only tension here was Pete Carroll going to let Geno throw it there in the red zone? I had to flip it over to see what was going to happen.
But incredible. This is a big
They like ran it on third and goal at the 10. I was like, come on, let Geno cook. I mean, he went 4 for 5, 33 yards. You know, they went down the field. Let him try to get a touchdown. Come
What's
on.
His revenge for, by the way? Like, utterly flopping as a second-round pick? I don't know what the
well, I think,
revenge
like,
aspect is.
Him and the head coach going back and forth publicly ever since, you know?
I guess, yeah, he would want revenge on Rex, but Rex is ancient Rex. History, yes. Obviously, there. So, like, a game like this, I don't know how much to take out of it for Seattle. All I can tell you is that you know, it's a nice little get-right game. There is an issue there on the offensive line. Brandon Schell, he returned from a high ankle sprain in this game, but then he left at halftime and didn't return. Carroll said that Schell tweaked it a couple times, so you have to watch that in terms of them, because the offensive line hasn't always been there for them. And the Jets, of course, are now 0-13. Jacksonville seems committed to this, so it might take 0-16 to get the number one overall pick, which is obviously not ideal. I've looked at the schedule for both teams. My greatest hope, I guess, is the Jaguars have the Bears. The Bears are playing better the last couple weeks. But when I looked at this a couple weeks ago, I said, okay, could the Jaguars, especially if your boy Minshew is as great as everybody thinks, Can they knock off the Bears and Trubisky to finish 2-14? Doesn't seem impossible.
You know, you need to get on the Minshew bandwagon. He gives them a better chance to win, and you can yeah. lace in all the little slights that you wish, but he's going to give you what you want so that you have a quarterback that you
I
can
I thought the Jaguars
you know,
were tanking. Why was he even
about?
Playing this week? What happened to that narrative?
Well, I don't think the coaches are tanking. I mean, I think we've established, like, the front office could probably say we'd like to see this person, but you think Doug Marone's thinking, I want to tank so I can get fired and the next coach can get a great quarterback? Like,
I was the one saying that's why it wasn't a tank. It wasn't a tank situation. I'm just saying, now Minshew.
I'd say the same for Adam Gase, though, that Adam Gase just simply isn't talented. I mean, Adam Gase isn't part of some deep state plot to tank the Jets and then, you know, receive offshore money somewhere. Maybe he is.
Maybe the Jets are tanking by keeping Joe Flacco on the bench. Let's see their best quarterback in New York.
Why did we need to see three games of Mike Glennon to prove that he's still Mike Glennon?
Well, we did.
If I was a Seattle fan, I think there is a difference between their defense right now, and I know it's the Jets, but it's like the Jets just put up a ton of yards and points against the Raiders, who are a dog defense. This is the type of thing that dog defenses don't do. They just throttle one of the, you know, the worst team in the league. So I think they are making some progress on that side.
Well, they lead the league in sacks since week 9 going into this week.
Seahawks?
Yeah. I mean, it's not coming from places you'd expect. It's not your number one dominating edge rusher, but they've found a way to make it happen.
All right, so if Minshew is indeed a big upgrade, can you guys give me one win at Ravens, home Bears, at Colts? Can you give me one?
Whew. That's a tough slate. They did beat the Colts in week one, and they know them well. But I think the Bears, you're right, is their best bet there.
Yes or no? Can you give me a win?
What
or do
the
I have
games?
To go 0-16?
I'm not giving it to you.
At Ravens, home Bears, at Colts. Give me one.
I mean, I'm arguing that Gardner Minshew is the best option for them and a 10-year backup. I don't think he can win games alone. They're going to need a lot to go right. I mean, they haven't allowed less than 21 points since like week one or something. So their defense is the bigger issue, not just which quarterback starts.
I mean, the Jets are going to take this thing home unless the Patriots week 17 feels like the only way that they're possibly even going to get one.
Enjoy all Patriots. Your little Jet digs and slights, because it's going to change sooner than you think.
We're not digging on them.
Mark my
I think
words.
We've been like totally respectful to the Jets this during
Enjoy
a tough
the
season.
Ride.
Well, I don't know who you're talking. Change. Who are you talking to? Yourself?
Enjoy it while you can. Let's move on.
Mitch Trubisky goes in with a shotgun, drags a receiver in motion to the right, out of the gun, he sticks it in the belly of Montgomery, a crack turns into a canyon out to the outside left, at the 40, 45 to the 50, nobody's going to get him, 20, 15, 10, 5, skipping into the end zone, David Montgomery, a first snap, 80-yard gallop for 6, and the Bears lead the Texans on their first snap of the game offensively.
Oh, Jeff Joniak, WBBM. David Montgomery set the tone with a long TD run, and Mitchell Trubisky threw 3 touchdown passes. His first matchup opposite Deshaun Watson as the Bears stomped the Texans 36-7, ending a 6-game losing streak. Greg, I know the Texans are missing many of their playmakers at this juncture, but did Mitch really outplay Deshaun in this one? Did that happen today?
Sure. I guess. I guess it was a good pick by Ryan Pace. After
Nailed
all.
It.
I mean, I take it back. All that
Bring
criticism.
Everyone back.
They have scored 10 straight touchdowns in the red zone, the Chicago Bears. How about that? Wouldn't have expected that. I mean, this was more about the Texans' defense, but absolutely, Mitch and Nagy were on some 2018 stuff where guys were open and they moved the ball very well. I didn't think Watson actually played pretty well for a while in this game, despite the score. But he was just holding the ball, waiting for some receiver to come open. And, you know, when Chad Hansen is your number one, Brandon Cooks was a late scratch for this game. So remember how we were like, well, you know, this Texans receiver core, it's, you know, they don't have DeAndre, but they've got 4 pretty good guys. That was like 3 weeks ago. They
They're
don't have any of those 4 guys. So it was rough.
They're all gone. The Bears sacked Watson 7 times, including a safety by Khalil Mack, you know, on the same day that Rosenthal was burying Khalil Mack on Twitter. So maybe that was a response.
It was a bad job. I just noted he hasn't been that productive here with the quarterback hits and sacks. I wish I had added Robert Quinn into that mix. It's just they have the highest paid defensive end, you know, tandem in the league. And I think they have a combined 15 sack, you know, quarterback hits and sacks. Quinn has 3 and Mack had 12. But Mack had a nice forced fumble early in this game, which kind of set the tone. He got the safety, his best game in a while. Allen Robinson played one of the best games of his career. He was awesome. And the Bears aren't out of it. They play the Vikings next week. If they hadn't blown that Lions game in horrific fashion, they'd be 7-6 and tied for that last spot right now. But that Bears Vikings game is basically an elimination game, and one of those two teams next week is going to get to 7-7 and still be in the mix whether we like it or not.
I mean, this is what they were meant to be, and I'd start with someone like David Montgomery that everyone I know that's a Bears fan has been telling me how great he is, and it's like, okay, he's been productive the last couple of weeks, but here's a little bit of a fly in the ointment. Your head coach, didn't he give up play calling here? I mean, it's Bill Lazor making these calls, designing this offense.
They have been better, and Montgomery has run better.
He has, but it's like, is it a great selling point that the coach you brought in to run a high-powered offense, it becomes high-powered for the first time in like 700 sundowns since he stopped calling the plays? Just seems like a little bit of a tough...
Easy,
navigational though. Point.
Take what you can get at this point. I mean, they were going to get kicked. You know, that was going to be the last. It still might be the last 3 games of Matt Nagy, but whatever gets it done. If it's the Lazor show.
You're playing against the Houston Texans, who have been the worst run defense all year long.
You're right. That helped. But no, he really has run. I thought he was like getting to be a capital B bust, and he's run well the last 4 weeks. He's made people miss. He's made some good reads. The low point, I think, of a pretty low Texan season was Romeo Crennel telling the sideline reporter coming out of halftime that they were lucky to only be down 23 to Mitchell Trubisky. It's like, man, we're lucky to be down 23.
Yikes. And since people like to do this, and we brought up Khalil Mack, who won the trade? Everybody wants to always know who won the trade. I don't know. So the Bears in that famous trade with the Raiders back in 2018, I guess it was, they got Khalil Mack, a 2020 second-round pick, which became Cole Kmet. They got a seventh-round pick in 2020 that was a lineman named Arlington Hambright. And then they gave up a first-round pick in 2019 that became Josh Jacobs. They gave up a sixth-round pick that became, I guess, was traded away. They got a first-round pick, Damon Arnett, cornerback, the Raiders. And the Raiders also drafted Bryan Edwards in the third round, 81st overall. So, like, and then the Bears gave Khalil Mack a massive extension. So who won that trade, Wes, so far?
Who knows? Who cares?
It feels like it's neutral. It feels like
not a clear
I feel
winner.
Like the Bears did because they had a, you know, Mack was the key in them having a chance. Like, he did everything they needed to do the first 2 years of that deal.
Right. If not for double doink, he's taking them to the Super Bowl.
But it was bad. It was bad. He's taken. I mean, that was a first round game. You think Mitchell Trubisky's going to the Super Bowl?
Why not?
Well, he's taking him to the next round of the playoffs. How about that?
It's because, I don't know. I'm not buying that.
If Mitchell Trubisky's one double dunk from the Super Bowl, give him an extension. He's still young. We got a shot here.
He has played a little bit better. And like I said, not only do they have the Vikings, but they have the Jaguars after that. The Bears are not quite out of this if they could somehow beat the Vikings.
I mean, Trubisky is building himself, not unlike the Colt McCoys of the world, like a 10-year career. I mean, he won't be a starter, but he'll make excellent money, and there'll be some seasons where he doesn't play at all and lives in a gigantic house in, like, outer Indianapolis or Los Angeles. It could be a beautiful future.
You're kind of like our beat guy, Mark, for who's going to have 10-year backup careers.
Well, I mean, it's a very attractive concept.
Let's move on.
It's a very attractive concept.
Outer Indianapolis.
What's Matt Flynn up to these days?
I want to be the emergency COVID quarterback.
You made that money.
Pick is up, and it is good. Chargers win. Mike Badgley with the game-winning field goal.
Yeah, good for money. KYSR. Because all season long, when there's been big moments at the end of the game, there's some shenanigans with game officials or something otherwise that gets messed up and he's unable to make a clean call. There he's able to do it. Charger special teams get the glory in this one. Michael Badgley drilled a 43-yard kick as time expired. The Chargers bounce back from that humiliation last week against the Patriots with a 2017 road win over the Falcons. See, they don't even get music. That's how sad this Chargers season has become. Los Angeles put itself in position for the game-winning kick because Michael Davis picked off Matt Ryan with 36 seconds to play, Greg. I bet this one felt good for Anthony Lynn.
It had to have, especially after all the focus on his game management struggles, which probably reached a nadir at the end of the first half, which one of the biggest fiascos I've ever seen. They just left points on the field. So to get a win in a game where it looked like Justin Herbert had just given it away, a moment after Matt Ryan had just given it away, in the final 4 minutes alone, the Falcons were in field goal range. Ryan throws an interception. Herbert gets the ball back, throws an interception, and then Matt Ryan gets him back into field goal range and throws an interception right back. And then Herbert, without Keenan Allen on the field, does move it down the field with one of the prettiest throws you'll see to set up that field goal. So it's nice for the Chargers to have nice things finally.
That was embarrassing at halftime.
That was tough.
To paint
the picture, it was 22 seconds left, 3rd and 1 inside the 10. I think it was about at the 8-yard line. And they come out of a timeout, and they run the ball with no timeout, and then there's confusion, and they don't decide what they're gonna do, and it takes too long, and then they run the field goal kicker onto the field too late, and so there's 22 seconds left at the 8-yard line, and all they got was a gain of no gain out of it. They never got the field goal attempt. They never got a chance.
Oh my God.
It was tough.
This was after Anthony Lynn had taken over special teams duties.
Sure. Well, I'm still reeling.
Although, to his credit, this was easily their best special teams day of the year. They had a nice kick return, and they could get the kick game-winning touchdown.
Does this team not employ the same department that 31 other teams appear to employ that tell you, like, do this with a minute and a half left?
Well, I don't
essentially
know
if, like, Greg in your ear?
I don't know if Herbert changed the play, because Lynn acted like you can't run in that situation, as if he, like, didn't know what was happening. But even then, your team needs to be well coached of, like, what happens right here. 22 seconds is plenty, actually, to run a play and then run the field goal team on if things go wrong. And they just were totally unprepared. But hey, the Falcons were even worse.
There's no points
after halftime. Ryan got picked off three times. He had 8 interceptions the whole season, and he got picked off 3 times in a row in the second half.
If you ever watch that Belichick-Saban HBO documentary, don't imagine that will be queued up immediately for this evening. But there's like a 3-minute uninterrupted clip of Belichick gathering like 15 players around him and quizzing these like freaked out offensive linemen on situational football. And they're not breaking that huddle until everyone gets it right. And it's all these little things that get under your skin every week, Greg.
All right. It is time. It is that time of Sunday night, where one handsome bald man is replaced by another. Nick Shook jumps on now, and he will take the baton from the great Chris Wessling. Wes, any parting words for tonight?
I'll leave the show in good hands with my boy, Nick Shook.
I appreciate that.
You could hear the confidence and the gravitas in Wes's voice.
Yes.
Chris, thank you. You are a warrior, and we love you.
See you, Wes.
Feeling is mutual.
Hi, Wes.
See y'all.
All right. All right, now with Shook on board, let us hit the final two games ahead of Sunday Night Football.
Very high kick. Spencer settles underneath it at the 17, avoids one tackler, runs into a blocker, and now he's loose. Spencer on the 25-30. Here we go, 35-40. Spencer foot race, 45 midfield, 40, 35-30. Deontay Spencer, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Denver!
Hello! Deontay Spencer got things going for the Broncos with a long punt return for a score. And Drew Locke was, well, you know, locked in, throwing 4 touchdowns and a 32-27 win over the Panthers, who have dropped 7 of 8. Shook, Drew Locke played like a guy who wanted Broncos fans back in his corner for another offseason.
Yeah, he had a nice little second half there, too. Really pushed the ball on the field and help the offense put some points on the board. But I tell you what, man, there were a couple times there where they tried to give it away. I got to credit their defense for playing pretty solidly in the first half and limiting what Carolina could do and really frustrating them while allowing Drew Locke the time necessary to build a little bit of a lead. Yeah, at one point it was 19-7. He hooked up with K.J. Hamler for a couple long touchdowns. It's nice to see him get involved as a rookie. But, yeah, I mean, it was a return to the promise that you would see out of Drew Locke. I mean, he had a fantastic stat line, 21-27, 280 yards, 4 touchdowns, a passer rating near 150. That's what you want out of a guy who you think is supposed to be your quarterback of the future, which he has not looked like for a good amount of this season prior to this week. So you could call it a lucky draw with Carolina, but Carolina's been a scrappy bunch for the majority of this season, so it's not like it was just an easy game to play, and he did well.
I get worried about these late December games where a quarterback of high suspicion goes nuts, and then everyone inside the organization starts to think, like, maybe we need to dig back in. But it is, you know, like any signs of life from Denver's offense is intriguing, just because we had such high hopes of them. What happened with Teddy Bridgewater here at the end, though? I saw a lot of comments from Rule about he took a delay of game penalty, and then he rushed on a third down right before the 2-minute warning, and it kind of deep sixed them. That's not how Matt Rule wanted to organize those final few minutes of the game there.
Yeah, and then on fourth down, he had a 1-yard pass to Curtis Samuel, 4th and 8. That's not going to get the job done. So it was a tough day for Teddy. I know statistically he looks fairly solid, 30-40, but there were a lot of times there, whether it was the pressure that Denver was bringing or just decision-making, he just didn't look like he was in a situation where he didn't look like he was comfortable for most of the game, wasn't in much of a rhythm for most of the game, even though, you know, they managed to make it close at the end. It just wasn't his best outing, I think, of this year. And it's kind of like, you know, we talked with our editor, David Ely, you know, known Panthers fan. they are going to be in the market for, I think, a quarterback in the draft in the first three rounds.
Right.
Going forward, it's this is not a long term plan for them.
But that was that. I think based on his contract, he was the actually the lowest paid veteran quarterback, like with a multi-year deal. I think that was always the plan. And if he surprised them, then they could change it. And he has guaranteed money, almost all of it, into next year. So he's going to be there next year with someone else. But he's played much more poorly over his last four games. This has been a trend. He's been struggling. He's had the Panthers have had the ball a ton with the ball, with the chance to win. And, they almost like they never win. They were 3-2 at one point. And they just it's been kind of a snake-bitten season for them.
Yeah, whether they leave it up to Joey Sly to try to hit a record breaker of a field goal.
every week.
Exactly. Or they end up, you know, with the ball in Teddy's hands and he can't execute. It's one thing or another. It's kind of annoying, though, because you do see the potential of Joe Brady's offense. It's just it has to be executed better.
They set the groundwork. No one was, you know... It was disappointing how it's gone, but they've set the groundwork.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
Matty Rhule was pretty pumped up about it. Could have been coach speak, but he was pretty pumped about Teddy Bridgewater entering the season. I would think if you asked him privately, he would tell you he's a little disappointed how this played out because I don't know if the salary – they got him at a good value for obvious reasons with Teddy's background. But I think they thought maybe they were going to get a little bit more. Is that fair to say?
Maybe, but I think the first half of the season – if anything, I mean, you couldn't have said he was below any expectations.
No, he was fine.
So that it's really, these last, he's kind of taken on water a little bit down the stretch.
Their offense has been watchable, much more so than I think I thought or many others did going into the year. Their wide receivers have been good.
Christian McCaffrey missed his 10th game in 11 games. Quad injury, suffered during the bye week, aggravated it in Wednesday's practice. That has been a major issue for him. He's going to end up missing almost the entire year after having that record-breaking season. So that needs to be talked about, too, when you're talking about Teddy, because he thought he was going to have the best running back in the league on his side, and he really hasn't. All right, let's roll on.
Snap to Dalton. Throws it right to slant to Cooper at the goal line, and he's got it for the Cowboys touchdown.
Brad Sham, the Sham God, KRLD. This was not an Andy Dalton revenge game. There was no revenge to be had for Dalton against the Bengals, but I'm sure it felt good for the veteran QB to throw for two scores, including that connection to Amari Cooper, and a 30-7 win. Shook, the Cowboys looked like a defeated team on Tuesday night. They showed some fight here.
Yeah, you know, it always helps when you run into the Bengals, who are quarterbacked by Brandon Allen. You know, they didn't have all that much fight in them themselves. They didn't help themselves at all either by fumbling the ball away. Three times in the first two quarters. They had three total turnovers in the game, but they dug themselves a hole, and it kind of made things easier for Andy Dalton. You know, it's not like the pressure was really on him. Their first score of the game, their first touchdown of the game, was a fumble return for a touchdown by Alden Smith. So it was 10-0 before you knew it, and Andy Dalton didn't really have to do much of the work to get there. And then you kind of let the Bengals just, you know, trip over themselves a few times. I mean, they're still a couple years away, and they're much worse without Joe Burrow. I mean, he was really elevating them before he got hurt. T. Higgins had a little bit of a rough day. He had 5 catches for 49 yards, but he had a couple drops, and it was really like the type of drop that it wasn't a contested catch. It's just like his mind wasn't completely there. He just wasn't fully focused on hauling the pass in. I think that's where the Bengals are at this point. So while we thought the Cowboys were also at this point, the Cowboys are still the more talented team. And when you get two teams that run into each other like that, and maybe they have a little bit of a source of motivation for, you know, to get their backup quarterback a win in the place that he used to call home, this is usually the type of result you see. And it was just the difference, the margin of victory was multiplied by those turnovers, those mistakes that the Bengals made. So it wasn't necessarily the most unwatchable game, but it was a very lopsided game for the majority of it. And every time, you know, you got three games on at once, every time I would turn and watch a play or two, I just found myself chuckling at what was going on the field, usually when the Bengals had the ball, because it was just like, oh man, like the end of the season cannot come fast enough for this team.
I know this is, I think it's because of COVID is a big part of it, but man, it feels like it's been week 17 for some of these teams already for a couple weeks. Like football season's like that, like it's long, the winter comes, there's injuries, like they take out, you know, they get but it's come early. I mean, this is why you're making the big bucks, Shook, coming in. I know you saw Cowboys Bengals on the schedule and you say they're gonna give me this game,
yeah,
and I'm gonna have to make it sing, and I'm going to, because I'm Nick and Shook.
It's funny, I was talking with Elia again about game assignments, and I was like, well, In the early window, it's I'm going to go down to Cincinnati and catch that Dalton revenge game for the guys in the podcast.
Right, does he play ball with you, or is he doing tough managerial stuff?
Oh no, we play ball. What it is, I'll pick the lead game that I really want, and then I go bounce back with what you guys want, and then I just take on like three games at once, and we just roll with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put everything on Nick Shook's shoulders. Humor me for a second. The Cowboys, let's give Cowboys a little bit credit because we were all talking about on Wednesday, and even Troy Aikman was crying in his soup about this. But what happened to the Cowboys? They're not even trying. The season's a disgrace. And then they can at least get off the mat and beat up on a team, which I wouldn't even have assumed they could have done that. So they did do that. They're 4-9. They have three games left. Listen, I'm not saying I'm in on the Cowboys. I'm just saying. Home 49ers, winnable. The Niners are, not having a good year. Home Eagles. I mean, let's not go crazy about the Eagles. At Giants. So let's say you win out. Unfortunately, Washington has the tiebreaker on you. So you need to win out and then hope Washington collapses, and I think that's the path. Not even collapses. Just, I guess you do. The Washington's 6-7, so they got to lose out. That's where the Cowboys are right now.
I mean, I feel like a nuclear bomb was dropped on that path some time ago. I understand the optimism, but I do
see no optimism.
If Washington hadn't won today, then you'd have something. But too bad.
They got to win out. Washington's got to lose out. It's that simple.
That's it.
Yeah. I'm not sure this Cowboys team wants to play an extra game. You'd have to sell me on that first, right. And then
they also
then
were outgained by the Brandon Allen Bengals, even though it was 30-7. And I haven't watched this game at all. Just looking at that, I'm gonna say they got a little lucky.
It was as bad as it looked in the score in the stat sheet. His parents were in the stands. They kept cutting to them. They're wearing their number 8 Bengals masks. I was sad for him, but
don't they have a paper bag on their head?
No, that'll be the people a section over because of social distancing. Dan, if that actually happens, not the whole Washington collapse, but the Cowboys winning out, what you're setting us up for, right? Entire offseason of the Cowboys are for real. They're getting Dak back. Super Bowl favorite again, which we've gone through for the last 2 years.
Nick, that's happening either way.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how the season ends. People will be talking up the Cowboys as a bounce back team.
That's
come
true.
Next. Oh, Dak's back. And oh, what a great draft. And all
it's hard to get a read on what they even were last season.
It's like Mike McCarthy just paid extra for a PFF Elite account. They're really going to go far.
All right, let's move on to Sunday Night Football.
Sunday night. 273, but he threw a pick. Back the other way for Buffalo. Taron Johnson will score. Touchdown, Bills.
Taron Johnson with the pick six of Ben Roethlisberger. Of course, Mike Tirico with the call for NBC. It was the turning point of the night for the Buffalo Bills, who pretty much coast from there. 26-15 over the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have now followed 11 consecutive wins to start the season with back-to-back losses. And that now puts them behind the Chiefs as the number 2 seed in the AFC. And on the Bills side of things, Shook, more of the same from last week. A lot of good vibes came out of their game last week when Josh Allen was lights out against the Niners. And this was more of a total team effort by the Bills.
Yeah, no doubt. The defense creating turnovers, getting stops, and really from the final moments of the first half all the way through the end of the game, a key interception at the end of the game to kind of undercut any comeback hopes for the Steelers. And then, of course, Josh Allen, like you said, just lights out again, and he's got to be thanking the heavens for that offseason trade for Stephon Diggs, who absolutely torched the Steelers' defense, specifically in that key sequence at the end of the second quarter and into the third quarter when they ran out, I think it was 23 unanswered that they scored. It really does wonders when you have a number one receiver, but especially when you have a number one receiver who can hit you in all levels of the field. And Stephon Diggs did that. His yards after catch had to be astronomical. I haven't seen the exact numbers, but he was great with, getting open, finding soft spots in the zone, and also picking up the extra yards and really kicking this offense from first gear, struggling to get out of first gear all the way into fifth gear and rolling. And if they play like this going forward, I mean, they're a team to definitely watch. It'd definitely be a tough matchup for other teams.
I love that 7-minute drive to end the game. I love stuff like that. I mean, when a team can do that against a number one defense, just finish the game with the ball in your hands. Get Mark Sessler, you know, to the recap. We're all rooting for the Bills to be moving the ball at that time. But that's like, to me, that's it. That's the NFL. Like, that's the point in which your team has basically just exerted its will. And in the second half, the Bills had 231 yards. The Steelers had 80. This game's totally on the Steelers' offense. I know Josh Allen will get a lot of attention, but it was the mismatch of the Bills' defense versus the Steelers' offense that really was decisive.
I'm with you. They had 13 drives. Oh, I'll let it play out. It's no less tedious than it was 4 years ago in the studio. But 13 drives. One of them went over 34 yards. Seven of them went under 10 yards. This is not a balanced offense, and this is weeks in a row. And I don't know who body replaced James Conner with little Jimmy Conner, who's never played a football game. But I mean, they can't establish the ground game. You throw in Deontay Johnson drops. They had drops in their last outing. They just seem out of sync. And I get that they've transitioned to a quick strike, if you want to call it that, offense with Big Ben. But I don't think it's really what suits the Big Ben that we knew of old. I mean, it's what he has to do now. But teams are adjusting. I mean, if you can't, like, you can't take them seriously on the ground. And, like, their defense played absolutely awesome, I thought, in the first half. But you're going to break a defense when you can't respond. They had their four drives in the second half. Three of them were three and outs.
Maybe it was every man tennis star Jimmy Connors, who's now the running back. He's about 66, which would, you know, check out for the way anybody in the backfield for the Steelers looks. But it's very depressing to watch the Steelers right now on offense because when this quick shot attack isn't working, it just feels like such a waste with all the skilled players on the field, with Deontay Johnson, who I know is having issues with drops, but, you know, James Washington, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Chase Claypool has become an afterthought in this offense all of a sudden. Oh, by the way, during this run where they're struggling to win games now. So, yes, when it works, the Steelers' offense, out of his hand quickly, get the ball in the hands of the receivers, and they make plays. Nobody had anything to say, but there seems something almost pathetic about it for large stretches of this game, and it makes you wonder if the Steelers' offense has the ability to pivot and not obviously go back to the way they were 5 years ago with Ben Roethlisberger, but to create some balance in the passing attack so it's not always the same thing over and over, because it really is a drag over and over. These little five-yard passes, these slants, these screens, just nothing explosive about it.
Yeah, but you know what? Bill Walsh built an offense around that, you know, almost 40 years ago.
Well, not the version of the Steelers offense.
Yeah, but they had a great
tonight, though.
And they had a great running game.
Yeah, and the problem with that, too, is that they're simply not executing on those short passes. Like, you know, the drop. So there was Eric Ebron last week, Deontay Johnson this week, and a couple weeks prior. It's completely short-circuited their offense, and you're right, Greg. They don't have a running game. You know, we thought last week, well, they didn't have James Conner, so that's why they couldn't run the ball. Well, they had James Conner tonight, and they still couldn't run the football, and they haven't been able to run the ball for a while. It's putting too much pressure on their defense. Like you said, Mark, they had a fantastic first quarter and a half, and really the whole first half. And
they gave up 100 yards and gave up 3 points to Josh Allen. Yeah. I mean, that should be enough to carry you through where you have a chance to win the game.
And then Big Ben puts it on a platter with the pick six and puts them in a hole, and they never get out of it. I mean, from there, it just started an avalanche. I know that this is something that a lot of people have said, and I know maybe it was an overreaction last week, but the Steelers have not looked like a one seed or a two seed for a while now, and things aren't going to get any easier for them down the stretch heading into the playoffs. I wonder if we're seeing the beginning of a meltdown.
Well, it all changed after that COVID meltdown. Really, they haven't been the same team since the COVID Wednesday game. It's been 3 weeks.
Right.
Well, they're in an interesting spot. They'll get the Bengals, and we'll see what happens with the Browns game. Like, whether, you know, we'll see what happens with the Chiefs. I don't think a two-game losing, I don't, like, count them out of it. I don't think they can. I think they can rebound. Their defense has to be so dominant, though. And now, when you don't have Hayden, Bush has been gone a while, Vince Williams and Dupree, I mean, that's now four of your key guys. It's not just, like, one or two. Now, hopefully you get, you know, Hayden and Vince Williams back. But I think about the Patriots in 2018 when they lost two in a row and everyone thought they were kind of dogs, and they won the Super Bowl that year. I think of the Broncos when they lost two in a row in mid-December, and they won the Super Bowl. People kind of thought they were dogs. So it's possible, but that one seed feels like so far away. And they're now in the lower tier of, like, they are going to have to figure some things out and get lucky along the way and win road games, which is tough.
I mean, I think their problem was the undefeated record shone a spotlight on them, and we have certain thoughts about an undefeated team that's, you know, deep in November, early December. And then you had the Chiefs sitting out there, and these comparisons that highly annoyed Steelers fans. I think, to Greg, you mentioned nadir like earlier. Like, tonight has to be the peak world of doubt for Steelers fans, wondering if, like so many other very promising Steelers teams, ultra tough, rugged, able to work themselves out of a corner or two, but will it end in January like so many other Steelers teams under Mike Tomlin, where good but not great? And we're watching another team in the AFC looks just 10 times more powerful in Kansas City.
Yeah, and the Bills. I mean, the Bills are...
Well, the Bills, sure.
I think Chiefs fans have to look at the Bills as, like, that's the team that scares you the most.
We talked,
and
about
they basically won the AFC East tonight, by the way. I mean, like, that's not a small thing. The Bills are going to win this division now.
That's a big deal. That is a huge deal. We talked about the Khalil Mack trade and who won that trade earlier tonight. It is one of the best trades. It could go down as one of the greatest trades of all time in terms of helping both teams. The Vikings send Stephon Diggs to the Bills. The Bills send a first-round pick to the Vikings. The Vikings draft Justin Jefferson. Everyone wins in that situation. So the Bills are hot. They're peaking at the right time. And now we wait and see what the Steelers are going to do, how they pivot off this kind of cul-de-sac they've parked themselves into. Very interesting. And we didn't get a very good... I mean, it was a cool outcome of the Steelers going down. There's some interest there and the Bills on the rise. But, man, we were hoping for a good game Sunday night to salvage Sunday. We just couldn't get it. We just...
Yeah.
We searched for it
Week
all day. We just couldn't find it.
There was
Week
a moment.
Week
14's messy.
Well, it's up to you, Mark. I mean, you know, Baker
up
and, like,
me.
The people on the field, like, yeah, they matter a little bit. But
I would rather put
you
that into
to deliver
Nick's
Monday
than myself.
Night.
I mean, if someone has to play an actual on-field role, I think Nick Shook would be the better person to pick than myself. What am I going to do?
Listen,
miss a 10-yard field goal?
We've discussed the mystery of what happened to me with the Browns, but the greater
no, we haven't.
The non
we've never
no,
really
no, we've
discussed
alluded,
it.
We've alluded to it. The non-mystery is the fact that I would never stand a chance with those guys after spending many, many on-field hours with those guys. No, not a chance.
Interesting. We're going to get to the bottom of that one day. Nick Shook's mysterious departure from the Browns. Real quick, the Raiders fired defensive coordinator Paul Gunther. I was going to make note of that during the game because Greg had teased he thought a big change was coming, but then wouldn't say what it was and wouldn't say it was the head coach or the quarterback.
I did say coordinator.
So I thought maybe it'd be the ball boy or something, but it's Paul Gunther who goes. So I guess everything is on Paul, poor Paul G. And we'll see if they can respond from that. And before we go, let's check in on the locks. Greg, another W for Rosenthal. He picks the Bucks and locks them up. Chris Wessling down goes Wes. He took the 49ers, who did not get it done. And then, of course, yes, if the game itself isn't enough, a lock-off for the ages, the old Zeuser is getting behind the Baltimore Ravens. Mark, and this is what I call the kiss of death, Erica, get behind the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, at least she's getting in before 11 minutes into the game.
Right. I think Erica's on a hot streak, potentially. I don't know why you'd be doubting our producer, anyone here. Like, I think she's capable of sky-high achievements on Monday nights.
I never doubt Erica as a producer, but as a picker of locks and fantasy teams... You know, and real teams. Then it gets a little dizzy. All right. Good stuff. Great to hear from Wes again. We'll be back on Tuesday with our recap of that big Monday Night Football game and look ahead to Week 15. How about that? How about that, Sessler? We're getting there.
I will absolutely, if the Browns get torched tomorrow night, I will look forward to Tuesday with the way I would look forward to, like, an axe being thrown from 100 yards away into the center of my head. I'm not going to be excited for that conversation, but I'm sure everyone will handle it with grandiose, you know, manners. So we'll be fine.
Mark, have you been doing? Have you been like taking victory laps? Have I been missing something here?
No, I never have.
That's what I thought. That's not in your character.
I mean, if they won the Super Bowl, I will. I've told you, I will set 35 automobiles on fire. But
even then, it's not decided. Even if they win, it's never decided with them.
Did any of our listeners reach out to you, Shook, about you know the thing that you're doing with a girl, the thing with a thing?
No, okay. they're all good people, and I also, like I said, keep my Instagram private. So there might be like 200 requests sitting there unanswered, but whatever.
Very good. All right. Let's get out of here. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Nick Shook, the Sizzler, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood in the shadows. Ricky stays in the shadows there. And you always wonder what's going on with her when she doesn't pop in. But that was her decision. Until Tuesday.